Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Now, if Michelle Lee is focused on how the patent system can fuel innovation and wealth, our next conversation comes from the other side of the economic divide. It's about how evictions contribute to a deepening cycle of poverty. Today, the majority of poor families who rent spend more than half of their income on housing, and millions of Americans are evicted every year. It's a crisis in this city and one we've talked about here on Radio Boston.
It's displacement on a massive scale. Tenants are more and more seeing this as, you know, a threat to their very livelihood, their housing, their life, because rents are rising so rapidly that no mortals can pay them.
So that was Matt Nickel. He's an attorney at Greater Boston Legal Services, talking to us in our recent series on evictions. Now, in his powerful new book, Matthew Desmond describes how evictions push people deeper into poverty, scar them forever, harm children and families, while providing a lucrative business for those who prey on the poor. Desmond is a professor at Harvard, where he co-directs the Justice and Poverty Project. He's a MacArthur Genius Grant recipient and the author of Evicted, Poverty and Profit in the American City. Matthew Desmond, welcome back to Radio Boston. It's great to have you.
Great to be back.
And congratulations on this amazing book. You write that as the real estate market has recovered with the foreclosure crisis and the ensuing recession behind us, evictions have only increased. And you say that these days evictions are too commonplace to attract much attention. So give us some sense of the breadth of this crisis as you see it.
So if you read books from the 1930s, 1940s, you're left with a very clear impression that evictions were rare. They used to draw crowds. They used to be protested. But times have changed, and we've reached a point where most poor renting families are spending at least half of their income on housing. And under those conditions, you know, eviction is much more of a result of inevitability than irresponsibility. And evictions have become commonplace in poor neighborhoods. In Milwaukee, the city that I study the most in my book, one in eight renters is evicted every 2 years. An astounding amount of instability.
One in eight.
That's right. That's right. And New York sees 60 Marshall evictions every single day. Renters in over 2.8 million homes in America report that they think they will be evicted soon. This is happening on the coast. It's happening in the middle of the country. This is an epidemic that's nationwide.
Mm. Well, for your book, you looked at eight families facing eviction in Milwaukee. And I want to ask you about one, because one of the things you do so powerfully is to really paint very intimate portraits of who these people are. So tell me about Arlene Beal. She has two children. She's faced eviction multiple times, including just before Christmas in 2008. Tell us about the challenges that she faced.
Arlene was a single mom trying to raise two boys. And when I met her, she was spending 88% of her income on rent. She was batted from one place to another through evictions. And, you know, one time Arlene, you know, spent a little money on funeral costs. Her sister died. And she just felt obligated to pay for the funeral. Another month, one of her boys hit a car with a snowball, and the driver kind of rushed to the home and kicked the door in. And the landlord evicted her for damaging property. And I think what you see in Arlene's story are these really difficult choices poor mothers and fathers are faced to make. You know, should I pay for the funeral cost or my rent? Should I pay for enough food for my kids or my rent? And you also see how tenuous a grasp poor folks have on their housing. You know, policymakers have talked a lot about high rates of residential mobility among low-income families without telling us why. And what this book shows is, like, families are moving so much because they're forced to. If we want more stability, we have to have fewer evictions.
Mm. Now, I want to ask you about Arlene Beal's landlord, Sharina Tarver. She actually gives Arlene and her kids a chance to catch up with their rent. And she's sort of an interesting character because, in a way, she does stuff to sort of help her tenants, her poor tenants. But then she finally takes her to court, has her evicted. So what do we learn about Sharina Tarver, the landlord?
One thing that we learn is the relationship between landlords and tenants is fundamental to understanding poverty today, and it's complicated. And I think we let ourselves off the hook if we say if we look at Arlene and we say, oh, she's just irresponsible, or if we look at Sharina and say, oh, she's just greedy, I think that the book works really hard to complicate that relationship. And you do see it turn Sharina being generous and funny and benevolent to her tenants. And sometimes she's callous and very hard. And I think the business of owning and managing property in some of our worst neighborhoods is a tough job, but it also can be a potentially lucrative one. And that's why Sharina got into it.
Yeah, and I want to ask you about that because, of course, the subtitle of your book is Poverty and Profit in the American City. And you really make the point that poverty in America has become a kind of lucrative business.
You know, landlords recognize that there's a decent amount of money to be made in inner cities and in trailer parks. The first time I met Sharina, she told me the hood is good. There's a lot of money to be made there. So what did Sharina make? Sharina took home about $10,000 a month after expenses, which was more than Arlene, her tenant, took home in an entire year. She made a decent living. She owned only 36 units. All of them were in the inner city. All of her tenants were poor or near poor. I think we have to have a conversation about what that means for us when it comes to addressing poverty. Poverty isn't just a product of low incomes. It's also a product of what some might call exploitation.
Well, say more about that, because I want to ask you a little bit about the legal process by which landlords can force tenants out. You describe how it works or how it doesn't work in Milwaukee. And while the system is set up, at least on the surface, to provide a hearing and a chance to give tenants a chance to remain in their homes, you describe a system that seems really stacked against them.
If you get arrested for a criminal charge and you are poor or indigent in the language of the law, you are provided an attorney, a public defender. And that's because we recognize that folks can't really have a fair trial without an attorney by their side. But in civil court, if you get summoned to court for eviction or foreclosure and you're poor, you have no right to an attorney. And so in many housing courts around the country, 90% of landlords have lawyers by their side and 90% of tenants don't. Many tenants, you know, don't show up to court because, you know, they'd just rather not face off with their landlord's lawyer or their landlord, who often is in court every month. Arlene had an 11th grade education. She did end up going to court, but 70% of tenants in Milwaukee who are summoned to eviction court don't. I think that also is a problem that we need to address as a nation.
Yeah. As part of our series here on Radio Boston on evictions, we met with Olga Pasco. She was evicted from her apartment in East Boston. And when we met her, she was living in a church nave. So let's listen to a little bit of her. She's speaking here through a translator.
Yeah, aquí vivimos. Y gracias al Pastor Don, que él nos abrió.
Yes, this is where we live, thanks to Pastor Don. He opened the doors for us to live here because the landlords, who have all the money in the world, they threw us out on the streets without compassion. They knew we were human beings, but nothing mattered to them. That's unjust. They put us in this situation. We didn't ask to leave our homes, especially in the way they threw us out.
So, Matthew Desmond, I'm curious what, I mean, you write about this very eloquently. What do evictions do to the families that you witnessed? I mean, obviously they lose their homes, but beyond that, what happens to them?
They also lose their possessions often, which are piled on the streets or taken by movers. And sometimes families just can't keep up the payments and their stuff is thrown to the dump or auctioned off. Eviction comes with a court record. And just as a criminal record can harm you if you're on the hunt for a good job, an eviction record has consequences too. A lot of landlords turn families away with recent evictions. Public housing authorities often count evictions as a strike against your record. So we're systematically denying public housing to families in most need of it. We have evidence that eviction causes job loss. And those listeners out there that have been through an eviction know exactly why. It's such a stressful, consuming event. It can cause you to make mistakes at work and eventually lose your footing in the labor market. And then there's the toll eviction takes on your spirit. You know, it's depressing. It's shameful. We have evidence that mothers who are evicted have higher rates of depressive symptoms 2 years later. We know that suicides attributed to evictions doubled between 2005 and 2010, years where housing costs were going up in many of our cities. So you add all that up, and I think you have to conclude that eviction is a cause, not just a condition of poverty.
Mm. You have a line in your book that almost sent a chill down my spine, and it's this. If incarceration had come to define the lives of men from impoverished black neighborhoods, eviction was shaping the lives of women. Poor black men were locked up. Poor black women were locked out. Why does this crisis hit poor black women so hard?
So the face of the American eviction epidemic is mothers with children. Most households evicted in Milwaukee have children living in them. If you go to any urban housing court around the country, you'll see kids running around. In the South Bronx in New York City, until recently, they had a daycare in their housing court because there's so many kids coming through the door. And low-income women and mothers in particular are exposed to eviction at extremely high rates. Among renters in Milwaukee, 1 in 5 black women report being evicted sometime in her life, compared to 1 in 15 white women. And part of that is a story about intergenerational poverty, but part of it is a story about motherhood and having children. Children are tough on landlords' bottom line. They can put stress on the property. And we know from talking to tenants in eviction court, surveying them, that you can hold constant what they owe a landlord, their household income, and a bunch of other things. But if they live with the kids, their chances of getting evicted in court triple. And what you're seeing there is not a judge or a court commissioner making that decision. You're seeing landlord discretion. So one story behind that statistic is the fact that kids don't shield families from eviction. They expose families to it.
I want to try to bring this closer to Boston and some of the numbers that we've learned. We've heard that there are more than 5,000 eviction cases which landed in Boston Housing Court last year. But advocates say that the real number is actually much higher than that. So in our series on evictions, we heard from Lisa Owens Pinto. She's executive director of City Life Vita Urbana, who testified this month before the Boston City Council. Here's a bit of what she said.
What we know is that in the universe of tenants who are getting eviction, the vast majority do not reach housing court.
Why is that?
They get the eviction. It's a document. They don't know that they have the right to go to court to contest that. And they leave. That's what's happening here, and that's why we don't have the data.
Is that pretty much consistent with what you found, Matthew Desmond, in your research?
My research would support that idea. One thing that I learned while spending a lot of time with landlords is the prevalence of what I call informal evictions. These are evictions that don't go through the court. And I met one landlord that will pay you a few hundred bucks and let you use his van to move if you're out by Sunday. I met another landlord that will just take your door off. There are a million and one ways to evict a family. Some are cheap and some are fast. We worked really hard to collect good numbers on informal evictions in the city of Milwaukee through survey research. And what we found was that most evictions in Milwaukee were informal evictions. For every eviction that goes through the court, there are at least two that don't. And so I do think that any estimate we have of evictions that are based on court records are going to be underestimates, yeah.
So I want to ask you a little bit about housing costs. Here in Boston, housing is incredibly expensive, among the most expensive in the country. Does the high cost of housing necessarily correlate with high eviction rates?
I wish we had better data on that. You know, the fact of the matter is we're still learning a lot about evictions all around the country, and there's 100 questions that remain unanswered. But it's absolutely true that the main cause of eviction is the fact that folks can't afford a roof over their head. When we surveyed families in eviction court, we learned that over 80% of them were there because of non-payment of rent. And so, you know, the story is for the last two decades, low-income families have seen their incomes fall or flatline, but their housing costs have soared. And there hasn't been an extension of any kind of federal aid or help for housing costs to kind of bridge that gap. And those are the three ingredients that are causing the eviction epidemic today.
Well, so this leads to an interesting part of your book about potential solutions. And one of the things that's being pushed for here in Boston is a just cause eviction ordinance, greater protections for tenants facing eviction. In your research, what are these types of restrictions on evictions do to eviction rates, and how do they help? Do they help?
I think that we have to have a conversation in Boston and all around the nation about the high cost of housing, the unaffordability problem. And it's absolutely right that certain laws and certain interventions in the court would make a difference. But we've reached a point where a family like Arlene's, who's spending 80% of her income on rent, she's not unusual. We've reached the point that that situation has become somewhat typical in the lives of our poor families today. And so I think that we have to have a national conversation about the right to housing. We have to ask ourselves, is access to decent, affordable housing part of what it means to be an American? And if our answer is yes, and I think our answer has to be yes, because without stable shelter, everything else falls apart. If we do believe that housing is a right, then we need to have a solution that's as big as the problem.
I want to ask you one final question, and that is, you know, in writing this book, you really made an effort to get close to these people who faced eviction and who are facing eviction. What surprised you most about that in living that experience? I mean, you've talked about the numbers. They're shocking enough. But what else surprised you?
You know, I saw a lot of pain, a lot of suffering. I saw what our nation has become for our poorest Americans, this blunting of human capacity, this denial of basic needs. But I also saw a lot of spunk and a lot of humor and brilliance in the face of adversity and generosity. I remember this one time I was at McDonald's with these two women, Vanetta and Crystal, and they were homeless. They had met at a homeless shelter after their evictions, and they were eating lunch, and this boy walks in, and he was maybe 9, 10, and he had dirty clothes on, and he didn't go up to order. He went around to the tables looking for scraps. You know, he was hoping you had a few fries left or you didn't finish your hamburger. And, you know, Crystal saw him, and she turned to Vanetta and said, you know, what you got? And these two homeless women, you know, pulled their money and bought this kid lunch and sent him on his way. My book is filled with moments like that because they reminded me how powerfully and how gracefully people refuse to be reduced to their hardships.
Well, that's Matthew Desmond. He's a professor of social sciences at Harvard, where he co-directs the Justice and Poverty Project. His new book is Evicted, Poverty and Profit in the American City. You can find more information about the book at radioboston.org. And Matthew Desmond, thank you so much for talking to us today. Thank you for the book.
Thank you so much.
And stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.